2FM Mornings
with Laura Fox
Podcast.
Sponsored by Maxall. From kids' lunches to tonight's dinner, you'll find bags more to get you through the week at Maxall.
Now, with all the great weather that we had last week, we've all been outside a lot more, and spring is definitely in the air. And lots of people reported seeing more bees and butterflies, and that is good for us all as pollination sweeps the nation. I'm joined now in studio by Alex Konechka, founder and director of Understory. Alex, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
I'm absolutely no problem at all. I'm absolutely buzzing to have you because I have so many questions about pollination and about how it affects us all. But firstly, I suppose we should start off by asking, what are the different types of pollination?
That's good fundamentals. So yeah, we've got three main types, and that's wind pollinated, self-pollinated and animal pollinated.
Okay.
Yeah. So today's, I guess, is animal pollinated that we're going to go deeper into.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about self-pollination first, though. Like, how does that work?
So self-pollination basically means that the plant has both reproductive organs. Okay. So they've got it all.
They can really do anything.
Yeah. So they can either have it on the plant itself or on the flower. So they just basically don't need anything from anyone.
Okay, fantastic. Well, we all love a bit of that. Like, it will work well in everyday life. Insects kind of just want their food. So how do the plants trick them into doing the job of pollinating?
Actually, flowers are being very clever by making themselves really attractive. Mm-hmm. So things that we also appreciate, like the smell, it's really an advertisement for pollinators to come. So it's almost like they're preparing this beautiful smelling, glowing landing strip for them to land on, and promoting their food, which is the nectar and pollen. But that is not the primary role of pollinators. Like you said, they're actually being tricked into it. They accidentally pollinate. They're really there for the food.
Yeah, they're there being like, oh my God, this takeaway is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then it's like tricks. They're actually delivering it to the next door neighbors as well. Which plants do insects prefer and why?
Good question. This is quite complex, actually. So I feel like because of the evolutionary relationships that plants have with our native pollinators, that's why the natives are preferred. So that's a good basic. When you bring in something from abroad, they're just not used to it. They might not have the mouth parts to even drink the nectar. So that's really important, to really embrace the native wildflowers specifically, things that they're used to. Open pollination is another thing. So an open flower usually means it's easily accessible, just like for us. If you think about it, if you have a tube, it's really hard to get to the bottom of the tube.
Yeah.
So it's the same for pollinators. They don't necessarily have, all of them have different mouth parts and lengths of tongues. So it's actually quite complex. But actually, blue, purple and yellow flowers, for example, they love those colours.
Isn't that mad that they've just got their like favourites?
Preferences. Yeah, absolutely.
What, like their favourite taste.
Yeah.
I mean, and as they should.
Yeah.
Like, we're all kind of the same. I like that you said that they like, you know, they like the native ones as opposed to bringing in different things. Mm. I suppose it's kind of like us years and years ago where we were like, no, I'm only having like my spuds, my meat and my two veg. Whereas we've evolved a little bit more. Yeah. Can, like, this might be a little bit left field, but can the pollinators, like the insects and stuff, can they evolve over time with different like flowers and stuff that are coming in?
They can, but it takes thousands of years.
Okay, fair enough. So not in our lifetime.
Yes.
Why is there so much focus on the bees among the pollinators? Like, we talk about them all the time. And I think we put so much emphasis on them and we really give them a massive workload.
We do. And there's two reasons for that. Number one is that they're extremely important for our food systems, especially in Ireland. We rely on bees for a lot of our agriculture and conventional food systems.
Yeah.
Abroad, there's so many different animal pollinators like bats and even hummingbirds. But in Ireland, definitely bees are really important. And the other side is that it's not just about what they do for us in terms of agriculture, but also in decline. And that's why we're really advocating for people to take action and help bees and notice them and appreciate them.
Save the bees has been like a massive slogan for a while now.
Absolutely.
But actually, this might be something that you might be able to help us with. If we see a bee in trouble, like, what is the best port of call? Like, what should we be doing for them?
That's a great question. So if you see a bee in trouble, is it really in trouble? Is it just resting?
Oh, fair enough. We never even
thought. That's number one for me, because a lot of people are really eager to help, and so was I. But then I learned, actually, they need time to rest. Sometimes they just want to chill on the wall or sit on the floor, and that's okay. So if you just leave it for a little bit and observe it, if it's in your garden or on the pavement, maybe move it to a flower, maybe where it's safe.
Yeah.
But don't necessarily be too eager. So it might just rest for half an hour and then fly away, and it's fine. But if it does look like it's not moving at all, you know, it's been there for a while, you think, then water and sugar is the best success recipe, just mixing a little bit of that and putting it beside it, or on a spoon, like feeding it, which can be really cute. That's the way to go. Yeah.
Sorry, absolutely gas. I never once thought they were just taking a little nap.
Yeah.
You know, direction. We're making them do so much
food into them. We're just like, let me just rest.
Oh my God, leave me off. Just give me a bit of a break. What are the different types of bees, and which ones do we need to, I suppose, protect the most? Like, what ones are we looking after more?
Yeah, I do think when people hear the word bee, I know it myself, I probably think of the honeybee.
Yeah.
But actually, there's 102 species of bees in Ireland.
Jesus Christ.
So there's a little more than just the honeybee. And the funny thing is that the honeybee is actually considered almost like a farm animal, okay, because it's a managed pollinator. It's part of agriculture, just like cows and sheep. So it's the wild pollinators that we really need to look out for, and that's solitary bees and bumblebees.
Okay.
So solitary bees basically look like miniature bumblebees. They're really fuzzy and small.
Yeah.
And the name solitary just means that they don't have nests, like we think when you think of a honeybee. They don't have hives and colonies. They just live by themselves.
Oh.
They're introverts, basically.
Bopping around.
Yeah.
So no wonder if you're trying to shove a bit of like sugar and water in them while they're just having a chill. They're like, I'm not like the honeybee.
Yeah.
Like, you need to give me a bit of a break.
This is why I like to be alone.
Yeah. So that's the solitary bees that we're looking after the most. And
yeah. Yes, and bumblebees as well. Yeah. They do have colonies, but solitary bees would be more specialized. So they would depend on specific plants and flowers.
Okay.
So that's why they're in more trouble, basically. So 30% of our bees are in decline, unfortunately. And even two have gone extinct. But we are seeing new bees emerge too,
okay,
because of the change of climate. So we have two new species of bee, for example. So it's all up in the air, really.
Yeah, it's all around the place, quite literally up in the air.
Yeah.
But talking about like actually saving them, I know we're gone to the extremes of like, okay, let them have a little nap, let them have their sugar and water and all that, but like, can we be planting more like, you know, flowers for them, or is that something we should be keeping an eye on?
100%. So planting flowers is one thing, also leaving wild areas is really important.
Okay.
So I think when I try and talk to people about what they can do, there's three headings for me, and that's shelter and nesting sites, it's food and drink, and then protection. So when we think about shelter, it's about nesting sites.
Okay.
And, you know, being able to find places where they can rest as well. So for bumblebees, it's long grass because they nest above and underground, and long grass, like patches of that, is amazing for that. For solitary bees, it's earth banks, because 80% of solitary bees are mining bees. So they like to mine under the ground,
okay,
and nest in the soil, which is crazy.
That's absolutely bizarre.
Yeah. And then 20% are cavity nesters, and they need already existing wood cavities.
Okay.
And this is where the solitary bee hotels come into play. So people can put out nest boxes for them so they can use that, because there's not as many trees around that they can, you know, burrow into.
Can you, and you say an S box, like, can somebody make something like that, or do they buy something, or what happens?
Yes, 100%. And I love making them. I do workshops where people can make them.
Fantastic.
Yeah. It's really fun, and it's really easy, you know.
Okay.
You just need some natural stems, or branches that have holes in them, and you just put them in a bunch, and then they just need to be a certain length, so about 20 centimeters. You put it out, make sure that the rain doesn't destroy them too quickly, and that's it. And they just use it, and you see them use it, which is the best. You see them lay their eggs, so it's all very exciting.
Oh my God, that is actually really exciting. So it is. So that's what I was going to ask, like, how can we help? Is that how we can help, is by leaving the grass? That's where we talk about no mow May all the time. It's been
100%.
Such a thing that we've done over the last couple of years, but that's incredibly important for this reason.
Yes, and I think that's why we were seeing such a surge in insect pollination, and just generally just there's a lot of buzzing around, and that's a positive, because I feel like the more we do these little actions of leaving wildflowers and letting long grass grow, and even it doesn't have to be that you let your whole garden go wild, but to have the boundaries of it wild and to have the sticks and the wood, you're actually supporting so many different species without even realizing. So yeah, it's really positive. And I think the number one would be letting the wildflowers grow, really, and dandelions, respected them, and even blowing them, you know, spread their seeds, you know.
Oh wait, so we're allowed to do this?
Yes.
Because I think that is like one of my favorite things to do as a kid, or when you're walking through a field and you're like, whoosh,
yeah, you were contributing. Look at you.
You
should be so proud.
What would happen, Alex, if we had no bees?
So that scenario isn't the most optimistic for us, because we do rely on bees for food. So a third of what we eat, it relies on pollination, a lot of food. strawberries.
Sorry, a third is such a huge chunk. Isn't it? Like, you know, because I mean, sometimes it really has to be like, what is going to affect us? Like, how are we going to be affected, and why would we want to help? You know, it's transactional nearly. It's not like you're just helping the bees for the bees. It's like, so when you put it like that, that a third of our food source would be completely eradicated if we didn't have pollinators like the bees. It kind of makes you really mad. So what, like strawberries?
So strawberries, apples, pears, plums, melons, squashes.
Just all the good stuff.
A lot. A lot of food we like. No more apple pie, guys.
Oh, God, no. No more apple tarts going around the place. Alex, thank you so much for coming in to very simply talk pollination, you know, how it can help us and how we can help them. Alex Kniachka is the founder and director of Understory. She's all sorts of interesting stuff on understory.ie. I'm assuming that that's where people can go if they want to help build, you know, little houses for bees.
Amazing
stuff. And this is all about how we can live closer to nature. Alex, thank you so much for coming in to us today.
2FM Mornings
with Laura Fox
Podcast.
Sponsored by Maxall. From kids' lunches to tonight's dinner, you'll find bags more to get you through the week at Maxall.